Do you think life is simpler as time evolves? For some, it can be more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. Elder Talk during this crazy coronavirus. Should I say era?
That's what it feels like, doesn't it?
It feels like an era. I'm hoping this is going to be so brief, though, but we don't know. So we know, however, that you're concerned about financial matters. We understand that. And so it's legitimate. I mean, the economy right now is looking pretty shaky. The stock market has gone down, then up a little bit, and now looks like it's headed back down. So elders, and by that I mean those of us who are over 60, we think a lot about our financial circumstances because we don't have the ability to recover the way many people do. I mean, when you're 40 years old and you hit a rough spot, then you go out and you work a little harder, you work some more hours.
Come up with a new plan.
New plan, new job, additional job. So those options, though, are often not available to many of you out there, to our audience. Some of you, those opportunities are available. We'll talk about that. But we wanted to reach out to somebody who is authoritative on this topic and ask them to come in and share their ideas and thoughts on this.
Yes, and we're so happy to have Louis Ray with us. He's the wealth manager of Vine Wealth Management. I like the name of that company, by the way. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for asking me. I appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about your background. You were with Edward Jones for a period of time.
I was an Edward Jones, disciple for many years, and now have my own firm, Vine Wealth Management.
Well, and Edward Jones is a good company. I mean,
very good
company.
Yeah. So you were a manager there. You were there for how many years?
Well, let's see. 1990, I started. So that kind of tells you my age. Started right there in South St. Louis County on Telegraph Road. Roughly 25 years, maybe. 22
so,
years.
And what's interesting, though, is first of all, you got some marvelous experience. Mm-hmm. Both in leadership as well as in basic financial planning and whatnot. But what's interesting is the transition apparently was triggered by your interest in focusing on perhaps a community of clients that you felt were in particular need. And this transition occurred somewhere around or shortly after the Great Recession. Is that right?
The Great Recession as opposed to the Great Depression, yes. That would be 2007, 2008.
You weren't around.
Never heard of it really referenced that way, but that's probably appropriate, actually.
Yeah. So
hopefully we're not building on another one of those right now.
Yeah. I've heard people use the phrase Greater Recession.
Yeah.
I've heard the phrase used Greater Depression. So talk a little bit about, though, this community that you had an interest in that kind of led to your forming your own company.
So I had an interest, and so did the company I was with, quite frankly, but an interest in looking at what money's effect is on life and how can we position that money in such a way that we live a good life and recognize what money does and what it doesn't do. And so ultimately, money's return on investment toward well-being and joy in our life is not quite as good as we might expect, but it does. It's to say that I think it was Mark Twain that said, "I've been rich and I've been poor," and it's a lot better being rich than it is poor. So we're not saying that, but I think that one of the things we do with our company, Vine Wealth Management, is help them to connect strengths and values, things they're interested in and enjoy doing, to their money, and how can we help create real, tangible goals and hold them accountable, and even discover what those things look like. A lot of times in retirement, we think that because our neighbor is playing golf and having cocktails, that's what we're going to do. And maybe you are, but maybe there's something else that aligns with you better. And so we try to help our clients find those things, even find relationships or connections, networks that help them to explore and then build smarter financial plans by doing that.
So it's all very personalized and tailored to their wishes.
Good.
Needs.
I couldn't have said any better. That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, that's the reason we have her here. So now, tell us then about what you've been hearing from your clients. I'll bet some of the calls you've been getting are probably the thoughts that are going around in the heads of many of our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, everyone right now, it's such an unusual type of a correction or market situation we're up against. You know, there's basically three types of scenarios that can lead to a bear market. A bear market would be a market that the stock market, if you will, is down a certain percentage, 10% or more, and then typically that would be defined as a bear market. And there's three that in the past, most of them are either cyclical bear markets where interest rates have changed or inflation, there's something mm-hmm. going on in the economy that's driving it, or a structural bear market. That would be things where maybe the financial world is not playing by the rules like we had in 2008, 2009, or maybe there's a structural issue as there was in 2001, where tech stocks were structurally too expensive and they've kind of bubbled the rest of the market. This is more of an event-driven bear market. So there's not as many of those. You know, the Twin Towers comes to mind, obviously.
Yeah, I remember that vividly.
And so typically these types of things, you know, have a quicker recovery. I'm not sure that's what's going to happen here because I don't know that our solution is going to be as quick as maybe some of the other event-driven bear market situations. But typically they do have a quicker, you know, in the early days and still right now to some extent, they talked about a V-shape recovery versus a U-shape or an L-shape or a W-shape, that sort of thing.
Well, when we think about the dot-com bust, that kind of came and went quickly. And then also, as you mentioned, 9/11. 9/11, I mean, I'm sure the effects hung around for a while.
Right.
But for the most part, as I recall, people recovered within 6 months or less.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they did. That was even probably quicker than that, quite frankly, although there was some expenditures and some budget issues associated with going back to war, et cetera, which came a little bit later. But the bulk of 2001 recovered in a fairly short order. But if you look at just tech stocks from, you know, what happened between basically late 1999 till early 2001, it took many, many years for some of those world flyers, you know. WorldCom that became WorldBomb.
Well, it was like the Holland tulip bubble thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Meaning that they got to such astronomical multiples and they never made a nickel.
Yeah.
They were just concepts
right.
in
yep.
many cases.
It was a better company even if it didn't make money. I mean, it was boring if it was making money, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that was a correction that had to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But one thing I want to distinguish, and I think many people, or at least this went through my head when you said 10% on a bear market, some people are thinking, wait, I've heard 20%, and they're thinking about for a recession, right? That's
right.
typically the yep. threshold that they would distinguish.
For a recession, and there's some other things in a recession involved with the unemployment and some other things that go into that. And to be fair, there are different percentages that you'll hear that define a bear market versus a recession, but those are some rule of thumbs that people use.
So a bear market just means the market has turned down. And if you get to 10%, clearly the market has turned down.
It's turned down.
Right, right.
Right, yep.
And you know, many people may feel it necessary to dip into their retirement fund. And I'm talking about people that are not of retirement age, but they feel it necessary because of, you know, this pandemic and they may be unemployed. There can be challenges and consequences with that. So what do you recommend?
Jill, you bring up a great point, and that's a good comment. You've thought through this, it sounds like to me. What you want to do in times like this is you want to minimize, if you can, the
right.
amount that's coming out of, let's say, stock investments. So we always try to have a certain amount in fixed income or cash, not just for diversification, which is the obvious, but in these times, if you were to pull out of an investment that had already dropped, say, 20%, the opportunity for that investment to march back up again is gone because that money is no longer in play to recover.
Right.
So what we try to do is first thing we do is we look at clients' portfolios. We try to create a buffer so that in times like this, you're not necessarily taking all of your money from a money market or a savings, but at least you can toggle some of that money so it doesn't all have to be extracted out of the stock market when the market is low.
Right.
And so that's the first thing. And the other thing is the more we can put in, you know, sometimes we want to move away from pensions into investments, and I'm probably somewhat guilty of that myself, but those who do have pensions, there aren't many of them out there anymore. They're going away.
Yeah, those traditional pensions.
Yeah, they don't have the volatility associated with what's happening to the portfolio because I'm taking income out right now. So some advisors like fixed income annuities to replace the pension, which isn't an only answer, mm-hmm. but it does, this times like this, I guess, shows that they do have a place for some of the assets. There's some maybe some growth challenges associated with that, so you can't look at that as a be-all, end-all as well. But you just have to be careful that we're not always pulling out of a dropping market if we can avoid not to do some other things. It's a lot better.
And I can see how the advice would be different depending on your age. In other words, if you're, I guess if you're 30 or 40 and you're experiencing a substantial downdraft in values, maybe even a depreciation on the level of 2009, like 50%, you still can expect that over time you're going to be fine. But as Groucho Marx said, I think, in the long run, we're all dead. So in the long run, it's not much help to somebody who's over, say, 60, much less over 70, and are in a situation where the stock they would expect to recover.
Yep.
Are there circumstances where it does make sense to pull out even though your money has gone down some?
Well, sure, because today the 401k is the investment vehicle. That's where the money is, okay? Whether it's a 401k or it's been rolled into what's called a self-directed IRA, which came from the 401k. And quite frankly, correctly so, an individual who's 60 years old probably should have 50% in stocks and maybe even 55% in stocks and 45% in some sort of other type of investment.
Fixed income.
Fixed income, yeah.
Okay.
And so you're not going to avoid taking that money out in that case. I mean, not only do you miss that opportunity for that money to increase because it's pulled out in a small way, but just look at the mathematics. And Joe, I know you're a CPA, I understand, so you understand this stuff.
Not as much as I should, but go ahead.
I'm sure. I don't know.
Oh, don't let him kid you. He understands it.
I'm not surprised. So if let's say you have $1,000 and that's your investment, you know, multiply the zeros however you want, and the investment goes down 20%. So now you have eight. You wake up one day and it's worth $800. Well, that's a 20% decline. So, but in order for that $800 to grow back to $1,000, so if the market goes back up the next day to 20%, you're really not back where you started from. So
you'd have to go up 25%.
You need a 25% increase to make up for a 20% drawdown. So that's why it is important to just manage your income. And it used to be back in the day, an investment advisor pick stocks and bonds. More to it than that, a good one is going to manage your income based on efficiency and look at those things, look at taxes. There's no perfect answer, and I'm not saying it's doom and gloom if you're the person who is out there drawing a considerable amount of your money out of a mutual fund right now that's maybe mostly in stocks. But it is nice if you can kind of think through it a little bit and plan how that income comes out.
Well, do you expect to see more of that if the economy doesn't reopen soon, where people are going to be the need to cash in their deferred
tax assets?
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know if they are going to need to cash in because they're just still going to draw income. It's still about the income. But they will have to continue to draw upon their retirement plan. I believe, and this is certainly not Louis Ray, the New York hedge fund manager, et cetera. Yeah, fortune teller, exactly. That's a better word.
I knew you were smart.
Okay. So, but I do believe that although today and yesterday is starting to show it, and so one of the things I've been communicating to my clients, I think the market is a little proud of itself. And as of 2 days ago, the market really wasn't any lower than it was a year ago today. And I can't imagine that if a year ago today we said to someone that we're about ready to go through a global pandemic,
right?
That virtually the entire United States of most sectors of the economy are going to be staying at home for an extended period of time without any real answer in sight, at least in the foreseeable future.
And 20% unemployment.
And 20% unemployment, probably heading to maybe even more than that. I don't believe the market would have stayed solid a year ago. And so just because we're coming back in maybe May 3rd, whatever that date is, I don't think you're going to pack up the kids and head to Disney World. So it's going to be a while before this economy and our valuations of our stocks, they run hand in hand with the growth opportunities of the United States. So I'm not going to say they were grossly overvalued. But when those growth opportunities of the United States change, there's not a lot of room for wiggle room there. And I'm just a little bit cautious right now on how long this is going to take before the stock market becomes healthy again.
That's an interesting way to think about that. I've never heard anybody else say that, and I follow a lot of columnists. To go back a year, look at to the point where we had a value that we have now approximately in the stock market, and then ask those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it becomes apparent, no, that'd be way too high. And so now we're thinking, well, because we were at the stratosphere, we were at 30,000 in the Dow, that now we're at 23,000, so we've paid the price for a world pandemic. And you're suggesting maybe not quite.
Maybe not quite. Yeah. And as of a couple of days ago, I mean, the high on the Dow was 29.5, and we were sitting at 24.2. And quite frankly, most of the difference was made up in December, January, and February of this year, where we had a strong run on the market. So if you go back, you could even make a case to go back to October, and it wasn't that much different than where it was just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm going to ask you once again to look into the future. What type of impact do you think this will have on those who will retire, say, in the next 5 years? Do you think we'll still be feeling the effects of this?
I don't. I don't think it's going to be significant 5 years from now. So I don't want the doom and gloom to go too far to where I give investors the wrong opinion. You still have to use equities and fixed income in your portfolio. You have to deal with it. One of the important parts of a good financial advisor is to deal with the behavioral side of investing, manage their emotions. In the short term, I'm just saying if it doesn't turn around here by the end of the summer, don't be too surprised. But I think that 5 years from now, this hopefully, and I'm not a scientist, but hopefully this thing's going to be worked out. And maybe there's more emphasis knowing maybe there's some other viruses that'll come down the line, but maybe a more of a continuous approach to trying to ramp up FDA approval should these things happen in the future,
mm-hmm.
and kind of have a system that maybe is a little more prepared for these types of things. And the other thing about a retiree, you have to be careful. Just because you retired today doesn't mean you died today. And so are people living longer or shorter?
Longer.
Yeah. Are they more active or less active?
More active.
So you've got to really be careful that you don't design your portfolio to also retire when you retire. There's still a continuation of life, hopefully. If you die, well, if you die, but you're going to die, of course.
But you know.
As Groucho said. But at the same time, managing your portfolio as if you're going to live is like buying insurance. And Kate, what if I do live?
Right.
Okay.
And that's a good way to look at it.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So you have to be careful you don't go too far to one side just because you're getting ready to retire with your portfolio.
You don't want to bet on an early death.
Right? No. No, not at all.
So, and I can see how where the lower it gets, the more you hang on because you figure, why not?
Yeah.
And I think your scenario of 5 years is more than reasonable. And,
right.
And I think that most people listening to this show would expect that they're going to be here, they plan to be here, substantially more than five additional years.
Right. And the other thing is, too, you know, it gets into this, not to get too technical on it, but if you look at future cash flows, let's say 5 years is the number, we'll use a company like Microsoft, which may be a bad example because Microsoft has some real revenue that's sustaining through this thing because of cloud computing and people are going out and buying a few more PCs right now because they're staying at home and they're gaming and stuff. But let's just use that as an example. If Microsoft, the share price of Microsoft started to drop, which it had recently quite a bit, and Microsoft was becoming no longer valued based on its future opportunity, but as if the next 2 years was the only opportunity for Microsoft. So you have to look at this present value of future
cash flow. Yeah.
Right.
And take that future cash flow, say 4 and 5 years back, and discount it to today and to say, is this stock not representing its future cash flow in today's dollars? Because let's face it, 5 years isn't that long.
Okay? No.
And so if we can get Microsoft, John Deere, whatever that might be, if we can get it to, there is a point where the investors, even though the economy hasn't changed today, they will buy that stock because they have a pretty good idea of future cash flows, and it's worth it for them to buy it now and hold on to it for that cash flow.
And do you think that there's a lesson to be learned from this pandemic from a financial standpoint of, you know, being better prepared financially, managing our money? So, you know, if something like this were to happen again, God forbid, we would be better prepared.
I think there's been, and obviously this is going to sound self-serving, but I think there's been way too much emphasis on how cheap can you get your money managed. You can do it yourself. You can do it cheap. There's no emphasis on, hey, maybe 1% is worth it. There was a study that was done a while back, and it was done by Vanguard, of all things, where they showed the average mutual fund over a 20-year period. I may not have my numbers because I didn't bring this with me, but it earned somewhere around 9.4%.
Okay.
But the average mutual fund investor earned around 3.8%. I mean, that's huge because of their inability to navigate through difficult times in a proper way and to make the wrong decisions. Fee compression is such that how much can we stand on that I just saved you 8 basis points? Well, you know, maybe there's more to it than that. And maybe so my point is we need to always be looking at rebalancing our portfolio, at the diversification of our portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to look at a more balanced portfolio that isn't just mutual fund based. Because today we have a lot of managed accounts that are mostly mutual fund based. So as an advisor, the advisor is saying, I'm managing the managers who managed the mutual funds. Well, there's too many managers. And so we can have ETFs and individual common stocks and a little bit more diversity in how those portfolios are run. I think there's some things that have to be looked at. And we've gotten a little bit into non-publicly traded assets that are just really difficult to deal with when you're ready to sell them. They're not publicly available. Some of these structured products that we're selling today are iffy. Maybe even some of your fixed income type annuities, some of them have their place, some of them don't. If you can get through all of that mishmash and build a good conventional portfolio and use an advisor who gives you good solid advice on taking income and those sorts of things, I think times like this kind of points you back in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be one of the good things that comes out of all
this.
And
everything you just said, it just supports the reason for having a good financial advisor. Because, you know, you don't want to try to navigate this on the cheap.
Some folks can do it, okay? Quite frankly, there's some folks who are very good at it. I would imagine Joe's probably, I don't know what Joe does with his money. It's the first day I've ever met Joe, but
I'm leery of the market, I'll tell you that. But
a lot of folks think they can do it because they're being told by the discount houses they should do it, because that's the only way
right.
they can capture you, is if they get you to think it's all about saving 0.5%. And so, you know, if they've got you there, then fine. But unfortunately, we're kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater on some of this thing, and some folks need better guidance in times like this.
Yeah, and I could see what you're saying, and I completely agree that there's this race to the bottom in rates. Who would have thought that Schwab was the first, which was, what was it, a month or so ago, that announced that they weren't charging commissions? It's a shocking thing.
Yes.
And so apparently the way they make their money is you keep money that's not active in a side account where they are allowed to pull off that interest, whatever they earn when they have the use of that money for that period of time. But it's because they scale so large. I mean, if you're simply a Schwab operating in 5 cities, you know, you couldn't produce enough revenues by investing just the cash that's sitting in an account waiting to be invested and not charging commissions. But when you scale it across the world, as you have the capability of doing now with this digital, you know, with these net businesses. So I think that that's a big issue. And there is an effort to use algorithms as a substitute for human beings. And so the algorithms just automate it. And once you have the program written, then there's no additional cost, no incremental cost for people using it. So then you can go down to fractions of a cent theoretically and make money because there's no cost for software beyond the initial cost of development.
Right.
But then you spread it over so many applications, so many uses, so many customers or transactions that ultimately, you know, you can have, you know, offer brokerage services for close to zero. But where are you getting professional personal attention?
Joe, you're sounding like a businessman when you're going down to the cost to produce versus reproduce, huh? You've got a little experience with this. I don't know.
It's interesting to watch your industry though, because
yeah,
it is, and it's an ever shrinking fee compression market, but that's why we like what we do with Investing You, and we think the relationship is still the last frontier to manage the client and what the client's emotions, what the client wants to get out of their money. And so everyone's on that same line. It's like everybody's beating it out on that same linear line of basically fee compression. And so we believe that to create a new line, a line that's focused more on the client and what the client wants to get out of their portfolio and still keep fees very competitive, but to focus more on the client, and that's where we're at. There are a few things going on right now with the CARES Act that I thought maybe your listeners might want to.
I want to talk about that. Yeah. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back, and you're going to talk about this new legislation that can be very important to those of you listening. Back in a moment with Elder Talk.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back with Elder Talk, and with us today is Louis Ray of Vine Wealth Management. Louis, you're about to tell us about the CARE Act, and why should our listeners care?
Well, that's probably not a pun. That's real. the CARE Act is created for all of us to make some at least some reasonable positive sense and opportunity out of what's going on. And quite frankly, some folks have looked at it and have said, "Well, I don't know if I deserve this money or if this money should be for me, even though it applies." But quite frankly, there's two things there. The government wants to put this money in your hands because they want you to use the money to stimulate to keep the economy moving. So there's a reason there. And secondly, I can't imagine a situation where our taxes are not going to go up in the future. So we went into this thing with somewhere around $22, $23 trillion worth of debt. We were in a vicarious situation anyway. And now we're adding more and more debt. And it gives a president or whoever it may be a platform to be able to say, "Listen, guys, we help bail out, but we need to also pay for this."
Yeah,
this is the reason,
right? So it's a connection there that I think voters will accept as well.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's an important point. Republican or Democrat, I think that the stage is set for a tax increase. Even Trump administration, if they win, I think that they really have to.
Yep. Yeah, I do believe so. So you're going to pay for it, no matter if you take the money or not. So you might as well take the money,
right?
So just to understand it, so if you're a retired senior and you are still entitled to the relief check, there's several things going on here, and I'm not prepared to talk about all of them, but I do know a little bit about all of them, and there's a couple of them here we can discuss today. But the relief check, which you see where maybe your neighbor has already received a check for $1,200 or $2,400. That's that standard check that everyone who files a tax return is entitled to the opportunity to be reviewed as to whether or not they would qualify. So, and you don't have to have W-2 income. You don't have to be working. You can just have Social Security and other forms of income coming in. As long as your income, if you're married and filing jointly, is not above $150,000. And it, by the way, it starts at $150,000 to phase out. It phases completely out at $198,000. So anywhere in that range, if married, filing jointly, you are entitled to a check. Okay, if you earn less than $150,000, you're entitled to the full amount, which is $1,200 per person, which would be $2,400 for your household, as long as you didn't have any other dependents. Now, if you have dependent children, they also get a certain amount of money depending on their age, et cetera. So if you have children who are under the age of, I believe it's 23, and living in your household. Don't quote me on that. But then if you're an individual, let's say you're a widowed or you're just not married or whatever it is, $75,000 is your threshold and,
okay.
and income, and that phases out completely at $99,000. So those checks are the checks in the mail, and some of you received the check, some of you have not. There's been a bit of a hold, as probably the listeners know by now, that some of that money is being held up right now, but I believe it's literally being voted on maybe today, maybe tomorrow. So when you hear this broadcast, maybe that's going to change. I don't know. That money should be coming your way. Just because it's been held up now, we're pretty confident it is still on its way to those people who qualify.
Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be a live check that's mailed. It can go directly into your bank account. Mm-hmm. And isn't there some sort of a website if say, the IRS doesn't have your...
Where you can track it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can track it. And I don't know where that is. I just probably know as much as you do. I know they've been advertising now that you can track where that money is and where you stand relative to that money. So I think if we Googled CARES Act compensation money tracking, I think you'd probably find pretty clearly how to locate that. To your point, though, the check is either going to be mailed to your house if that's where your tax return check typically goes, or any kind of check that comes from the IRS or the government.
Social Security check?
Social Security check, correct.
Okay.
So if it's coming to your mailbox, then this check will come to your mailbox as well. If you have it set up on auto deposit, it will auto deposit to that location.
Because the government already has that
they
information,
have the information
on you.
And they're going to use whatever is on file. The other thing that I know we were talking offline here, a lot of folks misunderstand on this. If you have not yet filed your tax return in 2019, you're okay. They will automatically revert to your 2018 tax return. So as long as you file the tax return in 2018 or 19, either one, you will automatically be available for this program. You don't have to go online somewhere and sign up for it. The check is coming.
So somebody that hasn't filed taxes in, say, 10 years, they're just going to be out of luck?
You've got to file.
Well,
yep. Out of luck, yeah. Or in prison. I don't know.
Yeah, they may not want to identify their location.
You're probably not.
Yeah.
Now, the payroll protection plan is a whole different program.
Right.
And you're going to talk a little bit about that.
Well, the payroll protection program is set up for small business owners, contractors, 1099 employees.
Freelancers,
yes. And that's an opportunity for them to recover some difficult times right now for them and their income squeeze, whatever it may be. And so there's a relatively easy form to fill out. You can get it off the Small Business Association website, the SBA website. You can typically get it from your banker. These things are being initiated by the banks, not by your CPA. And they'll ask you, depending on the bank, different banks have different requests that they ask in order to submit the on your behalf. And they'll ask you for some basic information. I can just tell you that in its simplest form, the form from the government is very simple and very straightforward. And I think most folks can probably fill it out very easily on their own.
But this has a broader application than most people realize. I mean, people expect that businesses in the traditional sense of the word, would be making this application. So they assume that it's restaurants, it's hotels, it's law firms, whatever it might be, real estate brokers. But in reality, it can include, as you suggested a few moments ago, it can include somebody who's an independent contractor, right?
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I want our listeners to listen up, because some of you might qualify for this money.
So originally, the program was set up such that, not originally, I guess the very early stages, that the owner of the small business could file on behalf of their contractors in order to keep their contractors employed. And with the program, which made in those early days, which was just a few weeks ago, the program was making changes almost daily. And just because they were really trying to get this out quick, it wasn't their fault. It was kind of work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that the best way to do it really was to allow each independent contractor to fill out on their own behalf and to receive this money, which is really a better way to approach it. So if you're an independent contractor, I'm not going to profess to know all the answers here, except for the high level art is that if you are an independent contractor, you're using 1099 employee income, you have the ability to submit for this particular program. You might want to talk to your tax advisor and just get some advice from them in the general sense. But as I said, they typically aren't the ones who are going to fill out the form. That's going to be done at the bank.
And this might be pushing you beyond what you know on this topic, but just to alert people that, you know, as they define an employee, if you're self-employed with an LLC and you're the only employee, is it possible to obtain part of that money because you're protecting your job? In other words, you're able to continue doing what you do?
Yes.
Okay. So yes, that you many can people be don't.
You're only employee.
Yeah.
And you still can fill out based on your, so your income would be based on your income. And not based on also ancillary income from other employees. You also can add in your health insurance and some other things. So
those of you though who are, you know, you're involved in some sort of self-employed business, some sort of gig, part of this gig economy, but it's a money-producing activity, and you take it seriously for that purpose, then you need to look into this. There's about to come a new batch of around $200 billion. We're actually pre-recording this, so this will be running several days later. So by the time you hear this, it hopefully will have already passed. So it's a new tranche of 200 or so, maybe 250.
I think it's about 250.
Yeah, 250 billion. Yeah. That's available. So don't assume that that's just for these businesses that you see and you drive down the street.
And many retirees, they do have small business hobbies, or not even hobbies, small businesses.
Sure.
Where they're doing some things on the side, whether it be working on everything. And maybe you're a retired accountant and you're doing some work on the side, or maybe you're working on lawnmowers or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I know. And we've talked about that before on the show, where people retire and then they start some sort of business. It may not be a very big business, but they're doing something that they've always wanted to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just continuing on, a couple of other things, though, that are important to know, and I guess the word's getting out, but I was surprised with my clients. It took a while for everyone to know that the CARES Act also eliminated the need for something called the required minimum distribution this year. They shorten it and refer to it as an RMD. What an RMD is, and any of our listeners who are over the age of 70 and a half,
they know that phrase.
They know that phrase inside and out. Unfortunately, they probably curse it.
What does that mean?
Okay, so you can hold a 401k as long as you want, or any kind of tax-deferred investment, IRA. But there comes a point where the government says, we want that money because you've got built-up tax money in there that you've never paid. So they allow you to hold this account previously up to age 70 and a half. They just changed it to age 72 this December in a completely unrelated bill. But you were able to hold this money to a period of time, and then you had to start draining it out, if you will.
Okay.
And so as you drained it out, you were taxed as ordinary income on that money coming out. So it gets – and it's based on your life expectancy. So obviously as you get older, your life expectancy – the amount of years to your life expectancy starts to come down, and the required minimum distribution goes up, and it can be a lot of taxes and a lot of burden. This year they're going to waive the need to take an RMD, not postpone it till next year and double up on next year's. They're going to completely waive this year's requirement for any RMD. And so that's something that
and that's because of the pandemic?
It is, because what they didn't want them folks to do, and it gets back to our earlier conversation, they didn't want them to have to sell out of their IRA or whatever, wherever this is being held, in many cases at a much lower value than what is healthy. So they didn't want that to create even a worse scenario where they're taking maybe large chunks of money out of their IRA to pay these taxes, to move it over to the other side to a regular non-taxable account, and they're doing it at just the wrong time as well. So, A, they're going to save taxes, and B, they're going to save the untimely flow of selling out of an IRA, in which many is in some form of equity, at the wrong time.
Yeah, and force people to sell at those times that we were talking about a while ago that don't make sense. There's also a provision in this CARE Act as I understand it, that allows you to borrow if you're still working. And normally you pay a penalty or substantial interest, mm-hmm. and you have to pay back very quickly anything you get out of your a loan on your IRA or mm-hmm. rather 401k.
Right.
So now the CARE Act allows you to take out, what is it, up to $100,000?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
$100,000, and that's a loan on your 401k, and you can defer payment on the loan for 1 year. So it's almost like free use of 1 year's of $100,000 in theory, if that's what you needed, with no interest on that particular.
No penalty.
No
yeah.
penalty either, as long as it's brought back in within 1 year. So you got to be careful there, but as long as it's brought back in 1 year, no taxes. No taxes or penalty on that money.
Now, you say brought back 1 year. Do you mean you start making payments a year later, or you have to pay the...
Exactly. The payments are deferred for 1 year completely, okay. and then you have to make... There's a schedule, and I'm not sure exactly what that schedule is. I'd have to check it of how quickly it has to be paid back in that case. Now, also on top of that, in the past, if you're not 59 and a half, if you took money out of your 401k, or your retirement plan for that matter, IRA, you would get charged taxes plus a 10% penalty. So for
that's
right,
tough.
Yeah, so it's a double hit.
And the penalty is 10%, I
mm-hmm.
think.
It is. Taxes huge. Plus 10%. And so this year, they're waiving the 10% penalty. You're going to have to pay your taxes, which you would have had to have paid anyway.
Sure.
But at some point, you're going to have to pay them out either through income or through a required minimum distribution that we just talked about. But it does allow you to take the money out without the 10%. Now, you still have to pay the taxes.
Okay.
So that's another thing.
And it also is important just for people who might otherwise have chosen to withdraw in those cases at a time when the market is so low. So when the market's low and you're confident that a year plus the scheduled repayment period, the market's going to be back, which I think most listeners are confident of that, mm-hmm. then it makes much more sense to borrow and not sell anything and then pay it back. It
gets back down to what we talked about in the beginning of the show about selling out of a lowering market. We don't want that to happen. There is another advantage here in the CARES Act. They have actually changed the limit on gifting. Previously, you could only gift up to 60% of your income for a given year, so you couldn't gift away your income, if you will. They've changed that for this year. You can gift up to 100% of your income, and so you can essentially put yourself in a situation where your income is negligible, if at all. Now, that's nice if you're so inclined and you're wanting to make a gift in a given year, some larger gifts. But it also works as a strategy because if you've been sitting on an asset that has a very...
appreciated value, right?
Appreciated value, exactly, Joe. Yeah, I knew you knew this stuff. and so there's a capital gain associated with that. Capital gains rates are such that below a certain level... You don't pay any capital gains right now if you can bring your income down low enough. So you can sell something and have a zero capital gains. So it allows you then to maybe gift your taxes down to a very low level or to no level at all, and then turn the tide on this appreciated asset and sell this appreciated asset at very low capital gains, if any, on that asset, and can make for a tidy little two-step opportunity for certain investors.
Yeah, so this CARE Act is really more beneficial than many people realize, and it came together pretty quickly.
It really did.
And the Trump administration was behind pushing this primarily, of course, but others were involved. So I think that it behooves our listeners to go online. You can look up the CARE Act specifically,
yes.
but and then go to those links, and it'll give further detail of what we're talking about here.
And make sense of it.
Yeah, the time has flown. So we'll wrap up. Louis, marvelous guest.
Yes.
Louis Ray of Vine Wealth Management. We're going to have you back as we emerge from this V-shaped recovery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. Till next time, another episode of Elder Talk. Take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Tucker Ellen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Sponsored by Tucker Ellen, your estate and elder law advisors. For more information, visit TuckerAllen.com. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Tucker Ellen. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.